You're listening to Graveyard Show Classic.
Good evening, friends of the undead. I am the Deacon of Darkness, the posthumous pimp. Freak Show!
And I am the Diva of Dismemberment, Mistress of the Blade, June the Meat Cleaver, from the Bordello of Horror.
You're getting your freak on with the Caretaker on the Graveyard Show.
Step into the graveyard with the Caretaker at graveyardshow.com. That is graveyardshow.com.
Podcast number 52, January 14th, 2010.
Hi, I'm Shannon Lark, Fangoria's 2009 Spooks model.
I am Stacey Ponder of Final Girl, and you are, I have no idea who you are, but I do know that you are listening
to The Caretaker on the Graveyard Show.
To the graveyard. Enter the graveyard every Thursday night, midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. And now, coming to you from Los Angeles, please welcome your host, The Caretaker.
And welcome to another edition of the Graveyard Show podcast. I am your caretaker, and the graveyard is open. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a good week. As you heard at the top of the show, we will be finishing our two-part interview with Miss Shannon Lark and Miss Stacey Ponder. This week, we're going to get into a lot of other stuff. Last week, we talked about the film that they did together called Ludlow. This week, it's gonna be very interesting. Let's put it that way. And it all begins right after this.
The Last Doorway Show features interviews, news, conventions, and independent horror films. Hosted by Miss Misery. Follow her journey through the horror genre as we discover the inner workings of the horror world. Visit thelastdoorwayshow.com.
And welcome back to the show, everybody. Also a reminder that February is Women in Horror Month, as declared by Hannah Neurotica from Axe Wound Magazine. And there are going to be a lot of events going on, not just in the United States, but in Canada and in the UK as well. Stay tuned to the Graveyard Show podcast for more information regarding that. As soon as I get that information, I'll be more than happy to pass along to everybody out there. But I can tell you this. There is an event going on in San Francisco on Saturday, February 27th, and our friend Rainey Young from the Last Doorway Productions is presenting the Women in Horror Con coming to the San Francisco Center on Saturday, February 27th. Some of the guests that will be there are Casey Hansen, Dottie Lux, Rainey Young herself, among others. Admission is free, and to find out more, well, you can either listen to the Graveyard Show podcast, go to our website, graveyardshow.com, or go right to the source, lastdoorwayproductions.com. That is lastdoorwayproductions.com. Also, if you live in Madison, Wisconsin, or in the surrounding area, just a reminder that our friend Rich Peterson from the Bordello of Horror has his show, Bordello of Horror, on the local station WYOU. That's WYOU. And I'm not sure exactly what channel that is. I had that information. I don't have it in front of me. Oh, here it is. It's analog 95 and digital 991. So the show will be on Central Standard Time, 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Sunday mornings. But just because you don't live in the area or just because you don't get the channel, you can watch it streaming online. And to do that, you just need to go to the website, wyou.org, wyou.org. As for this week's movies that you can check out, looks like it's going to be Drive-In Massacre and also Bloody Little Secret, which is a short, it looks like, and Speak No Evil, which is directed by Jeremy Lawrence and Aaron Calder, among other fun stuff that Freak Show has in store for you. So again, that is the Bordello of Horror on WYOU in Madison, Wisconsin, Sunday morning, 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. But again, if you don't live in the area, you can still catch it on streaming video on WYOU.org. You just go there and check it out. Check out Freak Show and the Bordello of Horror. But now it's time to get back to business. Well, we already dug the graves, so the workers have the week off. And I'm going to be picking it up with, well, we're going to talk about a film by the name of Lipstick. I said last week that the ladies were just getting warmed up, and I wasn't kidding. Stand by, folks. Shannon and Stacey are here, and they're going to rock your world. I will see you on the other side. So we were talking about Ludlow in the last podcast. Let's move on to the next project that you worked on together, a project that you co-directed called Lipstick. Who wants to tell about how this story was conceived?
That's all.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so when we were, actually when Stacey was writing Ludlow, you know, we were throwing back some ideas, doing some brainstorming, trying to figure out exactly what we were going to do. And, you know, Stacey, you know, had this, you know, kind of like this outline idea of what she wanted. And so I was just like throwing out ideas. I mean, we only had met at the Paranoia Film Festival and, you know, we did the contracts and everything was insane and I was drunk. And there was that band I was talking about. So, you know, wearing that tacky dress. So, you know, it was an interesting beginning of our relationship. So I'm emailing her and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Like, what if this character is like a chronic masturbator? And she was like, oh, well, that's nice, but I don't know. And she was like, well, you can masturbate in Ludlow if you want. Like, I can do that, like put a scene in there. I was like, yeah, let's do it. I don't know. I just got really into the idea of masturbating.
Well, and to me, like, if you're a chronic masturbator, like, your movie needs to really address that. Like, chronic masturbation is, I wouldn't say it's mental illness necessarily, but it's a thing. It's a thing you really need to address, and it wasn't quite going to work with what I was going for.
Right. Cause, I mean, it's like, that's what the movie's going to be about, is the chronic masturbation. I don't think she wanted to do, like, Ludlow as this, like, okay, no, she's, you know, this woman's a chronic masturbator, and
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
what the movie's
anything.
Entirely about.
Chronic hair.
Yeah, chronic
hair. She's going to be like, you need to make a movie about the, she won't stop brushing her hair, you know.
Yeah, I got really into it. So I was like, okay, well, you know what, I'll just go and write a script about a woman who's a chronic masturbator. And I was like, wait, what if, like, she's a chronic masturbator, but she believes her vagina speaks to her? Like, this, like, vagina is a thing. And it just totally made sense.
I'm sorry, did you just say that what if she thought her vagina spoke to her?
Yeah, like, what if she's so obsessed with her vagina? Like, what came before, like, the chicken or the egg? Like, was it the masturbation or the vagina speaking to her? Like, which one came first, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of thinking that maybe her obsession with her private areas actually led her to believe that her vagina speaks to her. Oh. But maybe her vagina does speak to her. You know? You never know. So, this whole
product is
that'd
not
be
like, hello, Betsy, like, are you going to be touching me today? Like, it's not like that. You know?
I was
going
to say, that could be an interesting casting session.
Oh, I know, right? So, very hands-on.
Yeah.
But
I'm bumps.
So I was supposed to shoot this in Oklahoma City in the summer. And it just fell through, finances, everything just fell through. And I knew I needed to shoot this, and, you know, it was going to cost me, like, for the DP that I wanted to go with, it was just going to cost me a lot of money. And, you know, like, I really wanted to do this, but I was like, okay, you know, I called Stacey up because I was just about to come out to California to shoot the rest of Ludlow, because we had that, you know, the scenes. We went back to Ludlow, and I was like, hey, would you be interested in shooting this with me and co-directing? And she was like, yeah. So, like, I was leaving in, like, 2 days, so I, like, packed everything up real fast, and I went to this camp for, like, 2.5 weeks to help take care of those with mental and physical disabilities. It was really insane. What a crazy situation that was. And so, like, it really just kind of helped to add to, like, just the desperateness of the film. So by the time I got to Stacey's place, I was like, I feel like I looked terrible. Like, I was out of my mind. So we went and we shot Ludlow, and we were like, whoa, that was really easy. Everything was smooth, and we ate blizzards, and everything was cool. We had omelets. And then we went to the Amargosa, which is right outside of Death Valley, and that's where we shot Lipstick.
Okay.
And so it's out in the middle of nowhere. It was quite an experience.
I was going to say, more desert shooting.
Oh, yeah. More, yeah. So, you know, in more like masturbation. I mean, that's really what the film is all about. She's pretty much like, you know, naked the entire time. You don't see anything. It's all implied.
Yeah.
But it's really depressing. Like, I feel like that movie depressed me more than Ludlow did, because Ludlow had so many chances to, like, scream and freak out and to really kind of cycle that energy through. And, like, Lipstick is like, I hate myself. I hate my body. I'm all alone in this world. My vagina speaks to me. And it's her, like, talking to her vagina. There's a scene where you see, like, it's a 10-minute film. And there's a scene where she's speaking to her vagina, but you can't really tell.
Oh.
You don't know yet.
Uh-huh.
She's talking to her vagina.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she's talking to it like a lover. Like, you know, like you, like a lover, like a disappointed lover. Like, you know, like maybe this relationship isn't working out, sort of thing. And you don't know yet, but through the rest of the film, there's some dialogue where she's actually speaking on the phone to a self-help line. Because really what the whole backstory is, this woman, it's a vagina dentata sort of situation, but you don't know if it's actually in her mind or if it's real. And she travels from motel to motel, and so we got to go to a new motel, so that was fun, to masturbate in another bed. and shoot this. So it was cool. And so she goes to these motels, and she's like, gotten rid of her family, her boyfriend, like, she's completely alone in the world, and she, like, masturbates violently because, like, it's incredibly painful if she doesn't. It's
Isn't
incredibly
like,
painful if she does.
Yeah.
But her vagina, like, does not shut up. Like, it is in complete control of what she does.
It's just a jabberjaw. It won't shut up. just won't shut up.
How do you feel about that?
It's interesting. I have to say.
So it's like I grew up with, you know, a few women who were like really obsessed with how they looked, how they appeared. You know, they really just it was like they really believed that their vagina was the only thing that mattered.
Really?
It's like, because that's how you could attract a man, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah. That's all that they cared about. So it became this obsession. And I think that's what I was trying to portray in this movie, that this woman has never experienced anything but that.
Hmm. That's interesting. You like intense roles, Shannon. What? I mean, you've come off these two films that are really heavy. What is it about them?
I guess I just really like really intense characters. Like, I like to play like the outcast or the crazy person, or you know, maybe because I can identify with it. I don't know. I think I must be like an intense person or something. Like, I just want it to be like this intense situation so I can, because it just makes you feel like you're really alive. And that's what I love about acting so much, is because it puts you right in the moment. It's intense.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of just playing, it's like, oh, I'm like, you know, the pretty girl in the movie, and I get to say like a couple lines, you know, but it's like really airy and really, you know, it's not really saturated. Like,
yeah.
that's incredibly boring to me. So So, I mean, I want to do something, like, really intense, like, extreme, you know? I want to go crazy. So, you know, we did lipstick together, and but, you know, we also did another movie together where I directed and Stacey DP'd, and that was up in San Francisco, and we did Voyeur. And in that movie, I get raped. So it's pretty intense.
So basically all of our movies are like me filming Shannon Lark with these like deviant sexual behaviors. And it's like, for our next movie, like
yeah.
No hotels,
it, yeah.
No masturbating, uh-huh. No like
yeah,
bloody
yeah, we decided.
Yeah.
Like we need to do something else completely before people think that we're just like making fetish films for ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
I see
you know,
a feel.
We're gonna tone it down, but like I don't know, I just went crazy this year.
Yeah. I have to say, I mean, you give it your all. You guys give it your all, that's for sure. I mean, my goodness gracious. Really, really. It's
never, like, exploitative. Like, there's no nudity. There's no, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting as a director or a VP or whatever to try to shoot these things and not show
sure.
anything. You
sure.
know, like... I don't know. Yeah, she gets raped, but you don't really see anything.
Yeah.
You know,
well, even going back to Ludlow.
Masturbating, but.
Yeah, I mean, even in Ludlow, like we talked about in the previous show, is that, you know, there's no nudity in it yet.
Yeah.
You know, you get the point. I mean, it's, you know
right.
what's going on. And,
yeah.
I mean, all joking aside with lipstick, I mean, to deal with the subject matter that you're dealing with, did you find, was there a fine line between doing it in a comedic way versus a straight up serious way, or?
Well, like sometimes, I would start doing something and then I'd laugh, and you know we'd start laughing, and then you know like in between the takes, she has this like homemade dildo that's like made out of a cheese grater.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and so, like,
that hurts,
you know,
just
like,
even
I would
thinking
joke
about
around with that. It hurts, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and we had vagina flakes, and so there were things that we could laugh about and be like, that's just gross.
Yeah,
that's
gross.
You know, it's
gross,
like,
I will say that. Like, there were a few things that I was literally disgusted by what I was saying.
It was pretty nasty.
But I'm sure it does help.
But,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it helps relieve some of the tension of the intensity that's going on. You know, I mean. I mean, like anything, I mean, there's a fine line between horror
yeah.
and comedy
well,
at times.
I think what I really wanted to do, because I've seen, like, you know, I've seen all these slashers and, like, the, you know, the typical TNA, and, like, I don't do nudity in film, and, you know, it's a conscious choice that I had to make and like really stick to, because there have been some roles that have come my way where I'm like, oh my god, like I want that so bad and I can't, and I want it because I'm running through the woods or I'm doing something incredibly intense and I really want to be doing that, but I can't. And so I think with these films, I really wanted to demonstrate that you can do a sexual situation and make it really disturbing, and you don't have to have nudity. Like that, what is really the nudity serving? You know, like
sure.
you really don't have to have that. Sometimes in movies, like when there's nudity, it's incredibly disturbing the way they portray it, and then that makes sense. But
and
most
you,
of the movies it doesn't really make sense.
Sure.
And I don't want that. I wanted to show that you could do this in a very disturbing way and not actually show anything.
Well, that's what I
yeah.
liked about My Bloody Valentine 3D is the fact that Betsy's walking around, you know, fully naked, and yet it doesn't, it serves a purpose, but yet it's not done exploitively.
No, she just happens to be naked.
Yeah, I mean,
you know
it's,
what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that scene. It's so amazing.
Yeah, because, I mean, she's...
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
Were
you? Yeah, I mean, because she's kicking ass in that. I mean, it's not like she's, you know, I mean, she's going out there, and that's one of those moments where you go, perfect. I mean, it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where are you at now in the editing of this film?
We are just about done. I think we're doing the last pass for audio. I found a composer. Her name's Dina Corbett, and she's actually a social worker. So she contacted me and was like, hey, you know, I heard about your work, and you know, I just wanted to say hi because you're kind of like a social worker for the genre. And I thought that was pretty awesome. And she runs a recording studio on the side. And so I just emailed her one day and I was like, you know, would you be interested in composing something? And she was like, yeah, because, and that makes it great because then this movie is worked completely on by women. So, you know, it's just me and Stacy and Dina. And so it just really kind of worked out. And she's, like, mastering the whole thing. And it's just turned out so good. So there's just, like, some little things that I found wrong with the audio, you know, with the dialogue and everything that I need her to fix. So after that, I mean, it should be ready by mid-January. And so that'll be coming out on the Viscera DVD.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll be sending you a copy, of course.
Thank you.
And so, yeah. And Boyer is actually going to be coming out on the next DVD.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, some pretty intense stuff. And Dina will be doing the composing for Boyer as well. And Boyer was worked on completely by women, too.
That's
so
great.
It's interesting to see women get together and make, like, some really, really it's almost, like, not right.
well, it's like if guys can do it, why can't women do it, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
You know, I mean, it's,
exactly.
You know, let's move on to something else. Let's talk about Viscera, Shannon. You were nice enough to ask me to have the show be one of the sponsors of Viscera, which I felt very honored about. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Now that
the submissions are done, December 31st was the last date for submissions. So where is everything standing right now? Where is the Viscera Festival at right now?
Well, we just met with the judges, which is Stacy, myself, Heidi Martinuzzi, Davey Snively, and then Elizabeth Feast. And so they actually came over. I'm in LA right now with Stacy, and so came over last night, and we watched the movies. And I never had judges before, so that was a really interesting experience to get other people's opinion, and it was really good. So we've made our selections of what's going to make it into the festival, and then a lot of constructive criticism for the filmmakers who did not, because I don't want to be one of those festivals that just says like, oh, you know what, your stuff sucks, so better luck next time, kid. This needs to be a constructive, supportive process for everyone who's involved.
Yep.
So we want these filmmakers to continue. Like, some filmmakers who haven't made it into the festival, I mean, their stuff has gotten so much better because they learned from their mistakes and they went forward, and the production quality has improved. So it's really fun to watch budding filmmakers, like, from all over the world. It's really exciting. And so we plan to have a festival either late spring of this year. Like, we're going to have an actual screening. We've never had a Viscera screening before. Other festivals have screened the Viscera films, but we've never had our very own, because I really wanted to get the festival started and, just really work more on, like, online, sponsors and getting as many companies and businesses involved. And so what we're going to do is we're going to play the last three years consecutively.
Wow.
And you can do the whole bloody carpet thing with the awards and just really make it a special presentation for the filmmakers involved. So it's really amazing what has happened in the past 3 years and how many people have really jumped on the wagon to support it. And how many, just meeting Stacy, like, how many filmmakers I've met who are just awesome. It's really exciting.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great. And out of all the names that you mentioned, all but one have been on this show, which I'm really proud to say as well. So
yeah.
We love supporting women
and
at heart.
The things that are going to, I see that there's a lot of support, like this whole Women in Horror Month coming up in February. We might not be able to make the festival by then.
In San Francisco, the one that rained it. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's actually taking place all over. And Raina's just doing something in San Francisco. But this whole Women in Horror month, it's the first time that that it's ever happened, this whole appreciation month. And so there's actually events going on all over the country, like festivals and things like that, to support women, doing their thing. So that's really exciting to see, because I really feel like Women in Horror Month and this whole idea of Viscera and everything, like this whole movement that's happening, it's incredibly important to make sure that men don't feel ostracized or feel like, just feel kind of like, I'm a man, so I'm, this is obviously not like a good thing. Like, I know that some men can get, have felt like a little like, well, I'm kind of being made to feel bad because I'm not a woman, sort of thing. Like, I kind of feel like, put down a little bit, because there's so much effort being put now towards, women really getting out there. And I feel like Women in Horror and Viscera, this should be really about women getting off their ass, laying down in this sort of self-deprecating idea of like them not being good enough and getting up and making something. It's really about supporting those women who haven't gotten up yet.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm really trying to aim for with all of this work. It's actually women. It's not about like the men who are keeping us down and, oh, it's this boys club. It's about women saying, okay, you know what? I can do this too, and I'm going to get up and do it, and I don't care what anybody says. To help make things change, it's women should stop saying, oh, well, it's the men who's getting us down. Because really, if you buy into this illusion that you're not good enough, or you're not talented enough, or you're not skinny enough, or beautiful enough, or whatever, that is actually your problem. That is not a man's problem, that is your problem. And you need to get over that, and you need to stand up, get off your ass, and stop being a diva, and make something. And if you don't want to, like, wait around and thick blood all over your face and fake glass all over your arms and work long hours and work hard to do what you want to do, and this doesn't just apply to horror films, it could be for anything, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. Maybe it's not right for you. I've met so many people in the horror genre who are like, oh yeah, it's amazing, I make horror films, and then, they really don't like to do it. It's more of this idea of like, hey, look at me, I'm really cool, but then whenever it actually comes down to doing work, it's like they turn into complete monsters. And so, if you don't really want to be here, then don't be here, but don't say it's because a man is keeping you down. I think it'll help women to really be able to stand up and say, okay, well, this is what I want to do. And I'm not going to go around blaming other people because I can't do it. Because it's really up to you. This is America. This is America!
Well, and that's what Viscera does, and that's what your website, the Chainsaw Mafia, that's what you do. You promote, you help get women that are interested in this. You help give them that forum to follow that and see whether or not it's something that they want to pursue.
Mm-hmm. And and you and I had talked about this before, but the idea of an actress learning how to direct and how to write and how to produce and how important that is. And so when actresses email me, or girls that are like 12 or 13 email me, oh, I want to be an actress. How did you do this? How did you do that? Blah, blah, blah. How did you get started? And I'm like, you need to get up and you need to do it yourself, because there is no, prince in shining armor going to come in on a white stallion and say, I will take you to where you need to go and I will make all of your dreams come true and you'll be rich and famous and happy and perfect. That isn't going to happen. And if it is, he's probably a pervert and you need to get away from him. Like, you need to do it yourself. So if you want to be an actress, make your own movies. Because it will open up a door where you can start working on other people's movies. But don't just come to Hollywood and be like, oh my God, I'm going to star, opposite of Tom Cruise, and like get rejected at every single audition because you're not famous. Like, you are talented enough. Like, take it in your own hands. Pick up a camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, That's what it's all about.
Well, you know, and I said it before, and I've played it on my best of, is, you know, the advice that you give women, I mean, it's priceless. It applies to anybody, because it's like, learn the positions, learn what other people do. Don't just walk in there like a diva and think that you're just going to, you know, do your little bit of work and have people praise you and, you know, kiss your ass and do all that stuff. And I mean, it is. It's perfect advice, because I think, especially nowadays, there are so many people out there that feel entitled to things that they don't want to put the work in. But if you put the work in, you will get the results. It's proven. I mean, that's what the country's been built on. I mean, it's like, that's what we are here in this country, is that you work. The American dream is you go, you work hard, you earn money, you can earn a lot of money, you can become, you know, an unknown to a super success in quote unquote overnight. And I think that's what is kind of getting lost out there, unfortunately.
Totally. And you know, I'm a firm believer of, like, what you think materializes in your physical reality, mm-hmm. you know, or in your mental reality. So, like, in Lipstick, the woman who was obsessed with her private parts and with her body and with the, you know, self-loathing and, you know, and thinking that she was completely controlled because she is a woman, well, it became so. So what do you want? So the idea is, what do you want in your life? And how is that, you know, what your thought process, how is that going to affect you? And how is that going to help you, or is that going to deter you from doing what you want to do?
Now, when you were on the show last time, Shannon, we had talked about Scream Queen Camp. Is that something that you're still putting together?
I would love to do that, but I don't think that it would be this year.
Yeah.
I think that it'll be in the future, but, you know, it would be a pretty hardcore camp. You know, it would have these basic philosophies that, you know, that the teachers would provide. And, you know, it's so funny, it's a Scream Queen camp, but really what you're doing is teaching women to, you know, to be independent and to work hard and to learn filmmaking in general. So, you know, I might, you know, Scream Queen, the term Scream Queen has so many negative connotations. So, you know, that might change, you know, like the different aspects might change, but it is still something that I really want to do in the future, most definitely.
Now, I want to shift gears here. Stacey, I read your blog every so often. I go back and I catch up on what I missed. And it is, if listeners out there have not checked out your website, it is one of the best websites out there, period. You mentioned on there a while ago, you were talking about comic books, and you were talking about some of the classic comic books from the 70s. And how great those comics were.
Yeah.
What is it about? And you mentioned my favorite, and one that I'm in the process of collecting originals for, is the Tomb of Dracula that Marvel did. Can you talk about that? About what those comic books mean to you?
Oh man. Oh, wait. Time to nerd out. Well, comic books have just, like, been a huge part of my life since I was a kid, you know, and that was back in the day when they cost 35 cents, and you could kind of walk to the corner store and they had comic books on the rack, and you would just pick them out based on the cover, you know, like, whatever was cool on the cover, and you weren't wrapped up in that collector mentality or, like, comics being worth anything down the road or whatever. It was just, and for a horror fan, I mean, the 70s just, there were a huge amount of horror-based comic books on the market. Like, all of the major monsters, all the Universal monsters, had their own book. There was Tomb of Dracula, there was Frankenstein, there was Werewolf by Night, you know. Marvel had a whole line of horror comics. And there were also horror anthologies on the House of Mystery, House of Secrets, Tales of the Unexpected, all that kind of thing. And it was just, like, a really fantastic time to be a horror fan and a comic fan, and I was like 10. You know, and the art was just like, some of the greatest comic artists of all time were doing their best work in the 70s. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm totally biased about the 1970s, And Shannon has, like, totally ragged on me about that before, but it's true. Everything was better in the 70s.
I agree.
Flat out. I'm not generalizing. Everything was better in the 70s.
I definitely agree.
You know, it was just a fantastic time, and I don't know... And nowadays, comic books are kind of... Once Watchmen came around in the mid-80s, and Frank Miller's Batman stuff, The Dark Knight... all of that, once all that came around, it's like comics kind of took a turn towards gritty realism. And so even horror comics kind of died out for a while. But then they come back and they're more, you know, there's rape and there's, it's kind of like the movies, you know, it's, you could, Halloween in 1978 is very different than Halloween 2007, you know, and that's just the, I think, a product of the times. But 70s stuff was just good storytelling and fantastic art.
Yeah, because that's, I remember one of the things for me was that when I first saw Tomb of Dracula, that the artwork just had left an amazing impression on me. Even to this day, I go back and I look at some of them, I'm like, my gosh. And it was, they were adult in nature without being too adult, I guess, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, and I think, you talk about this on your website, is that, again, the panels aren't, even in the black and white, like, they're done with just enough, not overly done.
Yeah, there's enough detail so you know what's going on, and there'll be a complete environment, and they're very atmospheric and very gothic looking, but there's not an overly, like, photorealism wasn't cool back then, whereas today it is. You know, you have comic book artists, very famous comic book artists, who trace photographs. Like, that's what they do for their cover, is they find a picture of you know, there are artists working who take stills from pornos and trace them and put a costume on it, and that's the cover for the book.
Oh.
You know? And it's, you know, some people like that. I'm not a big fan of it. But the art back in the day was just like you had a penciler and an inker who would just team up and just produce really gorgeous, really just gorgeous art. And back when I was 10, I thought it was cool, but I didn't appreciate it. And now I can look at it 100 years later and, you know, really just appreciate the craftsmanship involved.
Of times gone by.
Yeah.
Before I let both of you go, I had to get your thoughts on this. Do both or either or none of you consider Twilight horror?
Oh, wow. I don't think it's horror. I mean... I haven't seen it or read it, but my understanding of the things I've read about the films and the books is that, you know, it happens to have the trappings of horror. Like, supposedly there are vampires and werewolves and things like that, but she's certainly taken our ideas of vampires and turned them on their heads. You know, that they can go out in daylight and they can do this, and I don't even know if they have fangs, you know? Like, it's just... How are these? But I think it's romance. It's, you know, 100 years ago, Jane Eyre appealed to teenage girls. You know, teenage girls like romance. They like that sort of chaste, you know, we're going to hold hands and then maybe he'll kiss me on his cheek and I'm totally going to write his name on my notebook. Like, that's what Twilight is. Yeah. And that's fine. I think it appeals to a certain demographic, and I don't understand horror fans who get so upset about it. Like, it's not aimed at the horror crowd. It's aimed at the 13-year-old girl who thinks boys are cute and she has babysitting money. Like, that's the Twilight target audience.
Yeah.
I see absolutely nothing wrong with the Twilight series. Like, I think that, you know, the horror fans, they get so mad. They're so angry that it's being labeled as horror. And it's Stacey's totally right. It's not being aimed at this, like, very select group of people who like a lot, you know, slasher, blood and gore, or psychological. I think that there are horrific things in the movie, and I think that a horror movie can be any movie that, as long as it has something horrific going on, I consider it as a horror movie. Not everybody's going to agree with me. So I think that Twilight can be considered a horror flick, and I think that it would have been better if they would have gone into more of his absolute misery, because it's obvious that this guy has a lot of self-loathing.
And that in itself is horrific. But instead, you know, it's made for mainstream. They sugarcoated everything. This is about love, and there's nothing wrong with making a movie about love. And there's nothing wrong about making a movie with vampires and werewolves about love. It actually makes a lot better for the horror genre because more people will get turned on to horror movies. The more the merrier.
Hopefully. So, I mean, it's Romeo and Juliet with a supernatural wrapping on it. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's like the Beatles.
Two lovers who can't be together. For whatever reason, they can't be together, you know, and in this case, it's because he's a vampire, you know? But, I mean, I was in Borders today, and the young adult, that's the other thing, is that it's aimed at a young adult crowd, and that's what, I mean, why would it appeal to the 45-year-old hardcore horror fan?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, there are those people who are still going to enjoy Twilight, but I wouldn't expect Martyrs to appeal to a 12-year-old girl, you know, or a 12-year-old boy. Like, it's a different crowd. These books are in the young adult section, and it just so happens that it's caught on with an adult crowd, but that's not the target demographic. So why get that upset with it? And if anything, maybe one of these girls will grow up and say, hey, you know what, I like vampires. Like, Twilight got me into vampires. Now I'm going to watch Nosferatu. Now I'm going to watch Dracula.
Near Dark. Yeah.
Anything.
Or something. Yeah. Exactly. Like, I started out with Goosebumps. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. There's nothing wrong with enjoying, you know, these sorts of, like, supernatural characters, you know, in a lighter way. I find there's nothing wrong with it. You know, I'm kind of into it, actually, you know, but it's not the sort of movie that I would make, obviously. There's no chronic masturbation or vagina dentata in that movie.
I was going to say, boy,
yeah,
that series would take quite a swing at that point.
And the thing is, I can't testify to the quality of the film as what it's meant to be. I'm just speaking of it, like, on a superficial level as it's meant to be horror. It could be a really insipid, stupid film that's, you know, detrimental to human society at large anyway. I'm just saying, as far as, like, calling it horror or not horror, who it's going to appeal to, I just don't understand these horror fans who are so up in arms about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of stuff that doesn't appeal to me. I stop paying attention to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I say, like, that's really not for me. I don't get why people like it, but if they do, that's cool. But why spend so much of your time and energy hating something?
Yeah.
You know, and thinking it's cool to, like, go to see it, to heckle it, and, like, ruin the experience for the people who paid $10 to go see it because they want to see it.
Sure.
Like, that I just don't get. Well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of the people that went and saw Twilight also saw Paranormal Activity, you know,
yeah.
And that's a horror film.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the theaters, you know, people, the mainstream audience is going to go watch the mainstream movies. So, I mean, it's what's great about it is that the mainstream audience is watching a story that involves a vampire or a story that involves a werewolf, because if those movies weren't there, then they wouldn't be watching them. They would be watching, I don't know, Harrison Ford making love with a horse on a beach or something like that. You know what I mean?
What?
Knives and Rodanthi. Like, I love that. I think it's not Harrison Ford. It's somebody else. But damn it, it's funny. And they're like making out, and then there's these horses.
They're having sex with a horse?
No.
That's not.
No, I just got ahead of myself. Yeah, so I think it's pretty cool, you know. And there's this whole idea that, like, well, Bella isn't a strong female character, you know, and so that has posed a problem for a lot of women. Like, well, she's not a strong female character, so what does she do? You know, what are they doing with this? Because she's, you know, it's like, well, she's a confused high school student, and, you know, like, I remember how pissed off and confused I was whenever I was in high school. Like, if he would have thrown a vampire in there, I don't know what I would have done, you know? It would have been intense, though. So it's like, it's a light, it's supposed to be light, you know? And whenever, like, girls have to look up to, like, you know, Fergie and, you know, Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears, it's like, Bella actually looks pretty okay. No? She's okay.
I think there's very few role models for girls out there.
Oh, totally.
You know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. world right now.
Well, you know, it takes me back to an interview that I had with Donna Davies, who directed the documentary Pretty Bloody about women in horror. And she was saying that we were talking about romantic comedies versus horror movies, and how she's surprised how horror movies don't inspire more women role models, because, you know, at the end, the final girl is this the tough, you know, she outsmarts the killer, she survives, you know, and kind of portrays more of a stronger woman character.
Yeah, but even so, it's the final girl has just kind of come to mean the last girl alive, and she doesn't always really use her wits. You know, like, sometimes she's just kind of lucky.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and even so, it's hard to find well-written men that are good role models in film.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is something that I've been talking about lately, is, like, why aren't more celebrities, women who are in the spotlight, and you know, trying to starting organizations for young girls where they can, you know, like, you know, like Rain was started, you know, so that was awesome. But it's like, why aren't more women talking about body image and eating disorders and all these things that, like, it seems like so many of the celebrities are falling prey to? It's like, shouldn't like the women in the spotlight be, you know, working towards that and getting, you know, helping to, you know, all you have to do is just, you can hire people to start an organization for you, to help people. So why is there not that many women doing that? You know, there are females, there's plenty of female celebrities, and who's really, like, reaching out to, like, you know, to the, you know, the young girls in our society, you know, to help them deal with, you know, growing up and dealing with, you know, like, giving them good role models? I just don't see that. And that's really depressing to me. Because they could be. They're not using their talent and their, you know, and the fact that they're famous to really benefit society. So how can that be fulfilling?
You raise a good point. It is interesting, because you could almost say that, you know, for a lot of celebrities, you know, you could look at it and say, you know, they're in it for themselves. They're not looking at being a role model. I mean, I could go back and say, you know, look at the Charles Barkley ads of the 90s. I'm not a role model. You hear more athletes say that nowadays than ever before, because it almost seems like they either don't want to have the responsibility of being in the spotlight, or they don't have any interest in what their fans think, as long as the money and the fame keeps rolling in. That would actually be my answer to that more than anything else.
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, it's weird. It's like, you would hope that people who have a large platform like that would reach out, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know that it's their responsibility, just because they do happen to have this platform that's been foisted upon them because they wanted to be an actor.
Yeah. But I think, you know, nowadays, though, because especially in the A-list, when you have actors that are making $20 million or $15 million or $10 million a movie, or directors or writers or producers, you know, with that comes a price, whether they want it or not, because they're going to be in the tabloids. They're going to be, you know, on the entertainment shows, as much as, you know, it comes with a price, whether they want it or not. And I think to some degrees, they kind of need to live up to that. And unfortunately, some of them, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them just don't. And for whatever reason, they just either don't want to, or they can't handle that part of the success.
Well, I think what has to happen is that people need not to be paid so much. I mean, I enjoy Harrison Ford films. Is there any rational reason in the universe that he needs $20 million for a month's worth of work to play the president in a movie? No. No, like, there's just no rational explanation for that. Whereas people who are, you know, police officers and firefighters and people who are doctors, even, who
teachers,
are saving lives and doing important work, are paid crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just no rationalization for it. And so my way of thinking isn't like, Harrison Ford gets $20 million a movie, he better become a spokesman for March of Dimes. My thinking is like, who the f*** is paying Harrison Ford $20 million a movie? They need to stop that.
Yeah.
Ha ha!
And I don't disagree with that. I think that's very true. I think a lot of that has spiraled out of control. Even in sports, it's the same way. I mean, you have
I'm sorry, $100,000 to me is even an exorbitant amount of money. You do a month's worth of work and you get $100,000 for it.
Yeah.
To pretend to be like, oh, I had to play a rape victim. Like, I had to pretend that I got raped. Like, let's pay $100,000 to the social worker who's actually helping rape victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'll do it for free, obviously.
Yeah. But I think that's where the change needs to come. Because you know what? Honestly, I don't care what Harrison Ford has to say about universal health care. Like, his opinion doesn't mean to me just because he makes movies.
Yeah. True.
You know.
Yeah, but I just feel like these people, they have a responsibility to do something. To do something and not just be like, oh, well, you know, I get a tax break at the end of the year, so I better give like a certain amount of money to charity. It's like, I feel like you know, if you're in the spotlight, you have a responsibility. People are automatically looking up to you. You know, so you need to be doing something to help people because
that's
the only way.
Something.
I know. Yes.
You know,
very
what I mean, like I'd rather play it the other way that everybody has. I don't want to sound like, you know, a socialist or like a communist or something, but in, you know, on that tack, like everybody has a responsibility to their fellow man or whatever. Like, go volunteer at a shelter. Go volunteer and do this for 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think just because I don't see. I don't know. I mean, I do realize that people look up to... I keep using Harrison Ford. Like, what has he ever done to me?
You're going to be hearing from his agent.
I guess people look up to people like that. But to me, I'm just like, why would you look up to somebody because they're in a movie?
Yeah.
Like, that's... Okay, I guess I just think about it in a wrong way. It's like, why is he a role model for anybody just because he's an actor and his face is on People magazine's cover? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about the younger generation, though, and they're what they do is they watch TV and they listen to the mainstream music. And so whoever they see on the television, you know, if they like them enough, that's going to become their role model, especially if they don't have any good role models in their current lives. So many people like live through the television. I know I did. I lived through the movies that I watched, and it was very hard to find a role model. Like, I mean, I'm surprised it turned out this good. You know, so like if an actress was reaching out and being like, you know what, you don't have to weigh 90 pounds to be beautiful. Whenever I was a kid, like I wouldn't have started dieting when I was 9. You know what I mean? Like things would have probably have been different. And so all it takes is one person in the spotlight to be like, look, this is enough. Like, you're enough. Everything's okay.
Well, like, the problem is that nobody's telling actresses that they're good enough. So why is an actress who's been told repeatedly, you need to lose weight, you're too old, you're 35, you need some Botox now. Why the hell, I mean, you know, she's had it programmed into her that she's not good enough. No one's telling actresses that they're good enough and that they're pretty enough and that they look fine the way they are. So
it's even more difficult for them to then take it upon
themselves to tell little girls, you know what, you're fine, because for them it's been proven that they're not fine.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the things that women need to finally put down and be like, or at least start putting down, going through the process of, that's the whole idea of laying around in your own self-deprecation. Oh, okay, I guess you're right. Yeah, I guess I'm not. I guess I need to lose 5 pounds because I'm such a fat ass. It's like, that needs to stop. And the only way that it's going to stop is if the women say, okay, that's enough. Because anybody else?
Yeah. Well, the thing is right now is that if a woman says, like, no, I'm not going to lose weight for that role, you know what? You're going to get replaced. And so it's going to take a lot for, it's going to take women, every woman across the board to stand up and say, you know what? I don't need to lose weight. Because there are 5 million actresses waiting in line right behind you that are going to get that part, and they're going to have their face on the movie screen, and they're going to be on the magazine cover, and they're going to get paid. Whereas you're going to be sitting home saying, I love these 10 extra pounds that I have, and I'm glad I took a stand.
Yeah.
But that's
the way it should be
for women to become filmmakers themselves, so that they are in control of that. Because what that does is that lessens the blow. And so, and with the idea of all this digital technology spreading so readily, that I feel like that is going to change. That's changing the entire industry, and it's changing the idea that women have to be absolute. You know, they have to look like little boys to be attractive. That I feel like that is going to get wiped out. because women are going to be able to start picking up the cameras and saying, you know what, f*** you. I'm going to make a movie.
And that's why I love having Shannon and Stacy on the show. They are awesome. we could go on and on and on this. And
I know. We've just started going off.
It's great. No, it's all good. I think this is a fantastic discussion. To follow Shannon and Stacy, I'm going to give you the websites. Shannon, of course, thechainsawmafia.com. You can follow Shannon on that website. And, of course, you'll learn more about the Viscera Film Festival as well. And, of course, Stacy has finalgirl.blogspot.com, which you could follow her writings and learn about the films that will be coming out. And, of course, you can follow her on American Movie Classics website, amctv.com. That's every Wednesday she has her column come out on that webpage. Shannon, Stacy, always great having you on the show. Good luck with Ludlow. Keep us posted here, and we will definitely cannot wait to have both of you back on the show down the road. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Told you it was going to be great. As always, I appreciate Shannon and Stacy for joining me on the program. It's always great having them on the show. And again, if you want to visit them on their websites, it's thechainsawmafia.com. For Shannon and for Stacy, it's finalgirl.blogspot.com. We're going to talk about next week. And, next week begins our podcast devoted to, it's that time of year again. It's time for the 8 Films to Die For Film Festival. And, we're on Horror Fest number 4 already, if you can believe that one. Well, last year I was able to get 3 directors to join me from the After Dark Horror Fest, and that was Stuart Hopewell, Adam Girosh, and Faden Papa Michael. Well, this year we were able to get a few interviews on our own, but we got a lot of help this year from the After Dark Horror Fest. A lot of help from them. And they were kind enough to really help us out and get us a lot of interviews this year. So I can tell you right now, my goal for this year was to get at least 3 directors. I have surpassed that, which really makes me happy. So we're going to have some directors on the show. We're going to have some actors on the show. We're going to have a lot of people on the show from the 8 Films to Die For Film Festival. And if it's anything like last year, I'm going to be doing some special podcasts during the course of the week as well, because I like to fit my 8 Films to Die For podcasts during the entire week of the film festival. It just makes sense. So we'll have one on the 21st. We will have another one on the 28th. And then I think we're going to run one during the course of that week, because as we go into February, I'm changing it up from last year as well. Last year, we did our Women in Horror Month in March. Well, because Women in Horror Month has now been declared for the month of February, I'm going to pull that up a month to February. So you can expect an entire month of Women in Horror podcasts as well. Over these next, 6 weeks, we'll be doing 8 Films to Die For, right into Women in Horror. I have guests lined up for that. I won't spoil that, just like I won't spoil who's coming on from the 8 Films to Die For Film Festival. But if you do want to find out who's going to be on the Graveyard Show podcast every week, well, you can sign up for our Twitter updates, which is twitter.com/graveyardshow. twitter.com/graveyardshow. Now, if you want to get in contact with the show, that's the easiest thing in the world. You can send us an email. And the email address is graveyardshow@gmail.com. graveyardshow@gmail.com. If you're an independent producer, if you're putting together a horror convention, or if you're putting something together that's related to the world of horror and you want some promotion, just drop us a line. We'll post it on the website. We'll mention it on the podcast. It's an open door for promotion for all of our friends out there in the world of independent horror. All right, so that's it for this week's show. As always, I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening. The listenership is growing by the week. Very happy to see that. And We appreciate it very much here on the Graveyard Show podcast. We know that there are a lot of horror podcasts out there, a lot of horror podcasts, and there's a lot of horror websites. So the fact that you guys are out there taking the time to listen to the show really does mean a lot to us, and we appreciate it very much. And again, if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/graveyardshow. The website, graveyardshow.com. The show is also available on iTunes, Podcast Alley, and Podbean. And also, we're part of Horror Mall's The Haunt, Haunt Universe, All Things Scary, and Scary Finds, just to name a few. All righty, my friends, have a great week. We will see you back here next week as we launch our 8 Films to Die For podcasts. And I also forgot to mention, BC is back next week. Brian Collins, BC's Video Vault, will be back next week as well. Gotta love it. It's great stuff. Brian brings the goods when he comes on this show, and we're really happy to have him a part of the Graveyard Show podcast. So come on back next week to hear BC's Video Vault. He's going to review 3 movies that you should see, or maybe not. And as always, my friends, as you exit the graveyard, we like to remind you to please lock the gate behind you. We wouldn't want anyone to get out. Until next time. The Graveyard Show podcast is a proud sponsor of the Women in Horror convention presented by Last Doorway Productions in honor of Bay Area Women in Horror. The convention is coming to San Francisco on Saturday, February 27th at the San Francisco Center on 1800 Market Street. Scheduled to appear are Di Green, Dottie Lux, Casey Hansen, Michelle Fatale, Raina Young, Val Kilmore, among others. Of course, the guest list is subject to change. Admission is free, and to learn more, go to lastdoorwayproductions.com. That's lastdoorwayproductions.com.
Good evening, friends of the undead. This is the Deacon of Darkness, the posthumous pimp, Freak Show.
And I am the diva of dismemberment, mistress of the blade, June the Meat Cleaver.
Myself, along with the Harlots of Horror, host the online video podcast, Bordello of Horror. Check out all the twisted fun with featured films, news, interviews, reviews, and more.
I personally dare you to step into the bordello at MadisonHorror.com.
That's MadisonHorror.com.
MadisonHorror.com.
Due to the graphic nature of this program, listener discretion is advised.
Choose from Chainsaw Dismemberment, Nightmare 8, Satisfy your sickest fantasies.
It's a trick.
Hi, I'm Chucky, wanna play?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Every town has an Elvis.
No more room in hell. The dead will walk here.
We all go a little mad sometimes. Haven't you?
Destroy the Brain, St. Louis's only horror and cult movie podcast since 2007. Visit us at destroythebrainonline.com.
Hello, testing. Okay, so this is Miss Bren, and I just got back. You would think, well, all right. So I was out, I had to get supplies, and I came back, and I don't know where Brother D is. He's gone, and I don't know where to look for him. I just wish I would have watched some more of the zombie movies that he had told me to watch, because maybe then I would know, maybe he's someplace. If anybody has any idea where he is, or any suggestions, just let me know, mailorderzombie.com. Please.